Well, good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I want to welcome you to the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to upgrade license status. The program tonight will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for a general class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Tuesday and at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Sunday evening. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to our SCARS, that's STAR, S-C-A-R-S, STAR, server at either Echolink node number 96140, IRLP node 96140, or All-Star node AST 27404. Let me pause. For those who are interested, please contact Mike, KD0CDQ, via email at voip@scarsvoip.com to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connecting into the course. The material being presented is formulated from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made and in keeping with not interrupting the class in session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at VOIP at scarsvoip.com. It should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing sessions on this server, please drop us an email at, again, VOIP at scarsvoip.com. Let me drop it again. The session this evening will be recorded and posted on our website at www.scarsvoip.com. Please note, for all of our class members and the instructors, it's extremely important that we all stay on the same page during these classes. The only question pool and copy thereof that should be used when participating in this class should be the one found posted on our website. Publications from other sources may or may not be current and should not be used during our session. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? All right, hearing nothing, at this point we're going to begin, and I believe it is Mike, you, KD0CDQ, who has the first question, and I'm sure you'll go back and forth, but I hope everyone has questions of those two instructors. And comments as well. But please check in as well so they'd like to hear from you. So this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. I'm turning it over to you, Mike, KD0CDQ.
Good evening, everyone. This is KD0CDQ. I trust you've had a pleasant day. And let's enjoy the evening with a few nice, interesting ham radio questions. These should be quite interesting because it's something we don't always think about. I've got the first two questions. I'll be starting with Golf 8, Charlie 02. Golf 8, Charlie 02. The question reads, which digital mode is used as a low power beacon for assessing HF propagation? A, we have WSPR. B, we have Olivia. D, we have PSK31, and Delta, we have SSB-SC. Now, going over these, would anyone want to take a shot at which the proper answer is? Please go now.
K2HA.
Go ahead, K2HA Fred. Go ahead.
It's probably the one that needs the least amount of power and bandwidth, so that'd be WSPR, Whisper.
Well, I don't know if Fred liked the cigar, but he's won one. The answer is Alpha, WSPR. What is WSPR, ham radio digital mode? What is it? WSPR, or as it is pronounced, Whisper, is a software set that is used for weak signal communication, just like Fred said, between amateur radio stations. In fact, the letters WSPR stand for Weak Signal Propagation Report. Anyone have any questions on that? Okay, that wasn't too bad. Now we're going to go on to the second question, another nice one. This is Golf 8, Charlie 05. Golf 8, Charlie 05. It reads, in the PACTOR protocol, what is meant by the MAK response to a transmitted packet? I'll read it again. What is a packet protocol? What is meant by an MAK, that's Nancy Alpha Kilo, response to a transmitted packet? A, we have a receiver is requesting the packet for retransmitted. Bravo. The receiver is reporting the packet was received without error. C, the receiver is busy decoding the packet. Delta, the entire file has been received correctly. Anybody have a guess on that question? Over. That is an odd one. The answer is Alpha. The receiver is requesting the packet be retransmitted. NAK is an abbreviation for a negative acknowledgement or no acknowledgement. It is a signal used in digital communication to ensure that data is received with a minimum of errors. Does everyone agree on that? KD0CDQ, letting it drop.
Six, Victor.
Go ahead, Six Victor, it's all yours.
Well, first, Mike, thanks for being here tonight, Tiger. I just wanted to point out, you know, it's very interesting here that about two more questions down, I don't think this one's going to be covered tonight. And it's the CO7 question. It reads, how does a receiving station respond to an ARQ data mode packet containing errors? So what I'm trying to point out here, it's one-on-one, it's same-o, and you got NAK, requesting the same thing that ARQ could request, depending on where you are and how tight your shorts were. Go ahead, Mike, KY6V, over.
Okay, that's a good understanding of the question. I'm looking at the list of folks that are aboard, and I'm not sure. On my list, I don't show Rick. Rick, are you there? This is KD0CDQ. Are you there, Rick?
I am here. C5IR, Rick, in friendly Friendswood, Texas.
Very good, Rick. Now I see you. I don't know where you were hiding. You must have been behind a cloud or something. There's not a cloud in the sky up here in Dallas, but I guess there's a few clouds down where you are. Okay. Rick, take it away. You have the next question. Over.
All right, Mike. Thanks a lot. Yeah, my question, my first one is going to be Golf 8 Charlie 08. Golf 8 Charlie 08. Which of the following statements is true about PSK 31? First one, uppercase letters are sent with more power. Second one, uppercase letters use longer varicode symbols and thus slow down transmission. The next one, error correction is used to ensure accurate message reception. And the fourth selection of our multiple choice is higher power is needed as compared to RTTY or similar error rates. Anyone want to take a guess? Come now.
H-A.
The correct answer is B, letter B, and then beta, alpha beta. Uppercase letters use longer varicode symbols and thus slow down transmission. So I thought that was pretty important, so you can just hit that shift lock key and use lowercase and get a slightly faster transmission. All right, my next question is the one right below it. Golf 8, Charlie 09. what does the number 31 represent in PSK 31? Is it the approximate transmitted symbol rate, the version of the PSK protocol, the year in which PSK 31 was invented? That's a good one. Or the number of characters that can be represented by PSK 31. Any guesses on that one? Come now.
H.A.
Go right ahead.
Okay, very good. This is Fred, K2HA. Everybody seems to be bashful today in answering questions, so I'll jump in. The all of these protocols, the ones that have numbers on them, usually are the symbol rate. And so it's the approximate transmit symbol rate.
Very good. You are correct. The correct answer is A, the approximate transmitted symbol rate. Now, I am familiar with a couple of others that have the numbers behind them, but I don't know how high the numbers go, and I haven't used them in a while, so I'm kind of rusty on it. But I do know there's a PSK, what, 62 or 64 or something like that. Maybe somebody can fill in the blank for me there. What other symbol rates are there? Anybody? Come now.
CDQ.
All right. Well, I guess the bashful people are still taking over. All right, Mike, that was my second question. You're up next. Go right ahead. This is Rick, NC5IR.
Rico is going to answer your question. There's a PSK-65 and other numbers. I guess those are the same as the number 31. They have a symbolic meaning. Would you agree with that, Rick? Over.
Yes, and you can tell the difference. The higher the number, the faster things work. It seems like the rate is faster and better and things, but I don't know how many total that there are. That's why I threw the question out there. Okay, back to you, Mike.
This is KD0CDQ. Yes, I like PSK31 because I'm a one-finger typist. And a one-finger typist likes the 31 speed. I can get around there, and people don't realize there's only one finger working the whole thing. Okay, the next question we're on is Golf 8, Charlie 12. Golf 8, Charlie 12. Which type of code is used for signaling characters in the PSK31 signal? What type of code is used for sending characters in the PSK31 signal? We have Alpha Vera code, B Vera B, C volumeter, what are some words, and D is binary. Anybody want to take a chance, A, B, C, or D? It's your chance. Go ahead. Well, those were some tongue twisters right there. The answer is Alpha, Vera code. The answer isn't as tongue-twisting as the list that's given there. PSK31 uses Vera code in which different characters are assigned variable length binary that is a 1 or a 0 representation. More commonly used letters of the alphabet are assigned shorter length codes, while less commonly used letters have longer codes. This helps keep transmission efficient, much like International Morse code for CW operation, also a variable length code. Anybody have any questions on that one? Over.
Six, Victor.
Comment.
I thought I was going to get away with that. Go ahead, Gordon.
Oh, Mike, we've known each other too long. I'll let you get away with anything. Hey, I just wanted to remind you guys, both of you, to keep plugging this thought for everybody that's listening, and particularly the students that are taking the class. Don't concentrate on that alpha designator, guys. It's poison. When you sit down to take your exam, they're going to change all of those alpha designators on the multiple choice answers around. Your original question and your proper answer will remain the same, but the alphas are out the window. So figure out some way else to match it, and don't memorize the alpha designators. Go ahead, Mike, KY6V.
Okay, I think Rick has the next question. Rick, I think. I won't say what it is. You go ahead and surprise us all. Over.
Yes, I do. My third question now is Golf 9, Alpha 02. What are the typical characteristic impedances of coaxial cables used for antenna feed lines at amateur stations? What are the typical characteristic impedances of coaxial cables used for antenna feed lines in amateur stations? First possible answer is 25 and 30 ohms. The next possible answer, 50 and 75 ohms, or 80 and 100 ohms, or 500 and 750 ohms. Anybody want to take a guess at the answer? Come now.
Six, Victor.
Go right ahead, Gordon.
Muchas gracias, senor. KY6V here. Well, you know, the answer is 50 and 75 ohms. It's got a story behind that, too. You know that a half-wave dipole, guys and gals, the center impedance is actually 75 ohms and not 50? But a lot of people, including myself, will feed that with a 50-ohm line, and it's not bad because it's only about 1.5 to 1 SWR. If you use a 75-ohm cable, you know, you make the antenna happy on its end. But then the transmitter has still got the 1.5 to 1 because the transmitter is 50 ohms trying to get into 75. Food for thought. Thanks, Rick. KY6V, over.
AK.
Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, go right ahead. Next comment.
This is K2HA. Some of your older transmitters were built with that in mind. And I know one of my transmitters here, which is the built in the 80s, FT-102, the Yaesu, it has no trouble with 75 ohms. And it has a PI network in it. And it can handle, in fact, it likes it. So, but the newer transmitters are all set for 50 ohms. This is Fred, K2HA.
All right. Well, thank you for those comments. I appreciate it. And now we're back to Mike with his next question. Take it away, Mike. This is Rick, NC5IR.
This is KD0CDQ. This next question is not as simple as we would think. It looks simple when you look at it on paper, but I think there's a lot of confusion with this one. I've heard Gordon discuss this question, and I'm glad he did because it clarified what I was suspicious of. Okay, I'm going to Golf 9 Alpha 08. Golf 9 Alpha 08. It reads, if the SWR on an antenna feed line is 5 to 1, and a matching network at the transmitter end of the feed line is adjusted to 1 to 1 SWR, what is the resulting SWR on the feed line? Anyone want to give a shot at this one? I'm going to read these because it's not as simple as you might think, basically. The first answer is 1 to 1. Bravo is 5 to 1, C is between 1 to 1 and 5 to 1, depending on the characteristic impedance of the line, and Delta reads between 1 to 1 and 5 to 1, depending on a reflected power at the transmitter. Does that help anybody? Anybody want to take a shot at that question?
H.A.
Yes, go ahead, Fred, please.
Yeah, this is a funny one. The you know, they have to sell antenna tuners, and and what new hands usually don't understand is that it really doesn't make much difference what you put in between the transmitter and the antenna. It doesn't change the SWR of the antenna. The only thing it does is it makes your transmitter happy if it can get it to the right amount, the right number. correct answer is 5-1. It doesn't change anything. It is a lot of people get fooled on that one. This is Fred, K2HA.
Very good, Fred. If you knew how many, Fred, if you knew how many hours I spent with an antenna tuner on top of my transmitter and receiver and trying to adjust it, and the thing isn't doing anything, you would know what frustration is until I realized that the answer, bravo, is 5-1. It won't help to adjust the transmitter end of the feed line. You need to adjust the antenna end of the feed line. That means that you actually have to have your transmitter, your tuner up at the antenna, doesn't it? So sticking to matching network, adjusting to 1-1 at the transmitter end of things will leave you with an on-change standing wave ratio of 5-1. The voltage travels down the feed line to the antenna at the other end, and it's called a forward wave. In some cases, part of the voltage is reflected at the antenna and propagates back down the line in the reverse direction towards the transmitter, much like a voice echoing off a distant cliff. SWR is a measure of what is happening to the forward and reverse voltage waveforms and how it compares in size. Yes, the only way I can think of to get a good SWR reading that's actual accurate is to put an automatic machine up there at your antenna, because you can't reach up there. It's too darn far up. And Gordon, you help me on this one, because I was having a fit trying to adjust my radio, and every time I try to make an adjustment, it doesn't do any good. Yes, it stays at 5-1 because the adjustment has to be at the antenna end. Gordon, do you have any more comments you'd like to add to that? Over.
Comment?
Yeah, we've got George in there too. Hi, George. Let me answer Mike and let Mike pass it over to you, sir. Mike, I'm going to guess, number one, you were using an internal tuner on your transceiver as opposed to an external tuner between the feed line and the transceiver itself. Most of the transceivers on the market these days are doggone lucky if they can tune at least a 2.5-1 signal. Anything higher than that, they just get into all kinds of trouble. But an external tuner can normally handle the difference. So if you're at 5-1 and you're trying to tune it with a tuner inside of your transceiver, it's just not going to go, and nothing's going to happen. I will add just a couple of things here. Let me buy a nickel. Although the transmission line stays at 5-1 on this question, the tuner does help in the respect that it matches the 50 ohms normal coming out of the transceiver to whatever impedance that feed line and antenna is exhibiting. So you get maximum power into the transmission line. If you didn't have the tuner, the difference would subtract from your power availability, and could do some damage too, I might add. If your SWR is too high, you've got a heating problem, you've got a damage problem possible for your output amplifier. So I don't know if that answers your question, but you can answer my question. Were you using an internal tuner? And then turn it to George, please. KY6V, over.
Well, here's what I don't quite understand. My tuner is sitting on top of my transmit receiver, and the wire goes from the transmitter receiver to the adjusting device, and then it goes up to the antenna. Isn't that at the wrong end of the wire? Over.
No, that's where it's normally at, particularly from a practical standpoint. Mike, the example I like to use, you got a 200-foot tower, okay? And on top of that 200-foot tower, you got a 20-foot mast. And on top of that 20-foot mast, you got an antenna. Now, good luck at putting a tuner up there, Charlie. Your best bet's the way that you're doing it. We'll have to talk about this separately. If you were using an external tuner, there was something wrong. It just doesn't sound right. That tuner, if it's a decent tuner, and I'm sure it is, should have handled it for you. Over.
Yeah, as they say, it's okay now. All my equipment on HF is all pre-owned, and I don't know how old it really is, but I know I had to polish them up a little bit to clean them to use them. And I've been using them for about a decade or 11, 12 years. And they do fine, but I've got to be very cautious. Maybe it's my old cables. They're just as old. Okay, I'm going to throw this over to Rick, because I like the manual tuner. I don't like automatic things. I like to be able to turn knobs and twist wires. Okay, Rick, it's your turn. Over.
Don't forget George, guys.
Oh, yeah, how can I forget George? George, you're so colorful. I'd like to hear your comments. I'm sorry. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, buddy. KW4, Charlie Bravo. Mike, we played the game with tuners for quite a few years, and I've got two or three of them just sitting on the shelf. And what I have found is nothing like a good old frequency meter. If you know what range of frequencies that you're going to be operating, you could kind of attune that antenna with that coax all together to the frequency that you're going to be using there. You know, either a 20-meter dipole or your beam antenna. You know, if you, like I said, you go ahead and tune the frequency there, and Gordon might want to elaborate a little bit more on it there, you'll be far ahead of the game. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Thank you for that, George. I don't know if Gordon has a further comment, or does he want me to go ahead with Rick? KD0, CDQ, over.
No, we can get into this further later if anybody is really interested, but that's a good comment. A frequency meter and attacking the tuning, the tuning of the antenna is generally what is creating the imbalance in the impedance. There's some other tricks that we could talk about too, you know. What you see at the end of the coax on your VSWR meter is not necessarily true blue and tattooed. And I'll plant this seed. If you really want to know what impedance that transmitter is trying to transmit into, then you should have a multiple of even wavelengths of coax between the transmitter and the antenna. And if you do that, what's on the transmitter end will be exactly what is on the antenna end. And that's a subject in itself, Mike. KY6V, go ahead.
Thank you. I realize that's a very deep subject, and I've been trying to read up and more on that. Thank you, Gordon. Rick, it's your turn. You're up. Go ahead, Rick.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike. And the comments we had, Gordon and everyone. All right, the next two questions after Mike's last one deal with the same issue, is sort of playing around with numbers, G9A9 and G9A10. I chose G9A11 to sort of represent this series of questions. So you can kind of look at them and compare them and figure out what these ratios and the math, what little math there is involved by comparing these three questions. So my next question is G9A11. Let me buy a nickel here real quick. All right. G9A11, what standing wave ratio will result when connecting a 50-ohm feed line to a non-reactive load having 50-ohm impedance? Notice the two numbers, 50 and 50. All right. Is it 2 to 1? Is it 1 to 1? Is it 50 to 50? Or is it 0 to 0? Anybody want to take a guess at that one? Come now. All right. Well, if you looked at the others, you see it's a simple little math problem. The answer is 1 to 1. If you got SWR of 50 ohm and non-reactive load of 50 ohm impedance, your SWR is 1 to 1. All right. That's the answer to that one. Who's up next? Let's see. All right, Mike, I believe that's yours. You're up next, NC5IR.
Yes, KD0CDQ. And as a word in here, I have a tough time pronouncing, but I'll go for it. We're going to Golf 9, Bravo 05. Golf 9, Bravo 05. How does antenna height affect the horizontal azimuthal radiation pattern of a horizontal dipole HF antenna? Again, how does the antenna height affect the horizontal azimuthal radiation pattern of a horizontal dipole HF antenna? Here's the choices. Alpha, if the antenna is too high, the pattern becomes unpredictable. Bravo, antenna height has no effect on the pattern. Charlie, an antenna is less than one-half wavelength, the azimuthal pattern is almost omnidirectional. And Delta, if the antenna is less than one-half wavelength high, radiation off the end of the wire is eliminated. Who wants to take a guess at this one? Anyone want to try it?
AJ.
You got it, AJ.
Okay. Yeah, the antennas are always the most fascinating part of ham radio for me. If the antenna is less than a half wavelength high, the azimuthal pattern is almost omnidirectional. And sometimes you don't want to have your antenna too high, especially if it's a dipole. This is Fred, K2HA.
Very good. What Fred was picking was answer C. Charlie, if the antenna is less than one-half wavelength high, the azimuthal pattern is almost omnidirectional. That's the answer. The radiation elevation angle is the key factor determining effective communication distance between line of sight. Antenna height is the primary variable under control of the station builder. Since antenna height affects the angle of radiation, in general, placing an amateur antenna system higher in the air enhances communication capacity and also reduces chances of electromagnetic interference with neighbors. That's what I've looked up and found out as an answer. And actually, I am now doing it NSIV. I'm using a lower antenna because I'm in an HOA. I can't have a 30-foot or more mast out there. So I'm using a different pattern. My antenna is only 12 feet off of the ground. That's awful low for me. Anybody have any questions about that answer? So if the antenna is less than one-half wavelength high, the azimuthal pattern is almost omnidirectional. Anybody have a question or a comment on that? Over.
7-0.
Oh, go ahead, 7-0. I hear you out there. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. What does the word azimuthal mean, please? KD0CDQ and 070.
My buddy, I can hardly pronounce that word. Ask me, what does it mean? Maybe Gordon can give a better pronunciation. I'll just mess it up if I try to tell you. I think it means in all directions. I don't know. What do you think of that, Gordon? I don't think Gordon is there, but I think that means that the answer says the pattern is almost all directional. I think that's what that word means. It's just a fancier word. Anybody have another comment on azimuthal? What that mean? Over.
Well, this is in 070. The reason I was asking is I wonder if the definition of the word is somewhat consistent or related to use in aviation, like, you know, azimuth and angle off the horizon, and so, or if that is the wrong way to look at azimuthal in radio antenna propagation in 070.
Yes, I know what you mean about that. It is an instrument that gives you that reading. Well, one thing I'm always suspicious of antennas. I always think they work the best off the sides, than like if it's a wire antenna, than off the ends. But I don't know. That's the best I could find when I looked up quite a bit information on this question, and the best I could come up with is what I already told you. And I also have the rough noting here of how many feet long the wave actually is, but I don't want to confuse us with that. That's not part of the question. Does anyone else have a comment on that word? You can look it up in a good dictionary and probably get a much more clear definition of it. Anyone else have a comment on that word, azimuthal?
Okay.
Okay, let's just let that go for now. And I'm jumping back over to Rick. Rick, you've got the next question. Go for it, my friend.
All right. Thank you, Mike. My next question is Golf 9, Bravo 06. Where should the radial wires of a ground-mounted vertical antenna system be placed? Where should the radial wires of a ground-mounted vertical antenna system be placed? I chose this question because I've listened to guys talk about it and thought this would be a type of antenna that I could put in my backyard. First answer, possible answer, is as high as possible above the ground. So you have all these little radio wires overhead. Or the next question, B, parallel to the antenna elements. That would also be up high in the air. Or how about C, on the surface of the earth or buried a few inches below the ground? Radio wires of a ground-mounted vertical antenna. Or C, at the center of the antenna. So the correct answer on this one would be on the surface of the earth or buried a few inches below the ground. And I thought this would be an interesting little setup because you dig a little trench going out into all these directions just a little bit under the grass line so you don't cut it with your lawnmower when you're cutting the grass. And these radio wires will help get that vertical antenna to propagate a lot better. That's something that I had pondered doing in my backyard, but never really got around to it. Any comments or questions on that? Come now.
EK.
K3TEL.
Right ahead.
We've got Fred first, and then behind that will be Arnold. Go ahead, Fred, please.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I haven't put up a vertical antenna in my backyard. I have three dogs. And we have, you know, they'd probably dig up the radio lines, and so I stick with dipoles at the moment. But when you have time, I want to go back to the previous question. This is Fred, K2HA.
Okay, Arnold, you want to go ahead with your question, please?
Actually, I wanted to actually check in and add on the group here. Just want to say good evening to everybody. And I didn't have any question at this point in time, K3TEL.
Okay, K3TEL, you got it, Arnold. Good to have you aboard. Okay, with the next question, I think Rick, you still got the floor. Over.
Yes, this will be my last question. I have seen these kits that you can buy from the ham radio stores and things like that, where it's a aluminum or stainless steel box that goes on the ground and the radios are attached and go out in all directions. So that was something that I seriously thought about doing, but never got around to it. All right, my next question is Golf 9, Bravo 10. Golf 9, Bravo 10. What is the approximate length for a half-wave dipole antenna cut for 14.250 megahertz. What's the approximate length of a half-wave dipole at 14.25 megahertz? Would it be 8 feet? Would it be 16 feet? Do I hear 24 feet? The correct answer is 32 feet. Now, this is something, one reason why I picked this question is I actually got a box of Romex wire. It's solid copper wire, and actually made a couple of antennas out in the backyard. I would connect them to a, and I cannot think of that thing that the coax cable attaches to. Sorry, I haven't used a lot of this stuff in years, so I'm a little rusty on the terminologies. But I would cut the different length of the wire and test it on the SWR meter, and I've gotten some really good reports on how my antennas would get out. So the 14.25 megahertz would be approximately 32 feet long. All right, that's my final question, and I've got family over here waiting to celebrate my birthday and give me some presents. So I think I'm going to sign off and let you guys talk the rest of the night until your heart's content. All right, any question or comment on that one, then I'm going to check out. Come on now.
Rick, you mean you don't want us all to sing happy birthday over the air? Over.
And a 7-0 comment.
I'm not sure how you would do that. Well, Mike, maybe you could take a solo and do it. Or Gordon, yo, and his lovely voice. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Okay, our brother in Nottingham has a question. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, before Rick gets away, and this being his birthday, we I'm amazed at the forest critters here and how they gather so quickly whenever they hear the word birthday. And although we cannot transmit music over the channel, I'm wondering if Rick would like to have his family come in and listen to the traditional Nottingham Forest greeting of birthday things. It will take about 3 minutes, or it can be tabled and not done. KD0CDQ and the group NO70.
Well, I'll tell you what, Rick is a real hot baby being born in August like this. I don't know, let's leave the answer up to Rick.
I'm not sure what you mean by Nottingham Forest critters. I'm kind of puzzled here.
As I am also.
They are delightful.
Well, staying back on the subject, that's very true. On the 20 meters, when I looked up the rough length, it had 35 feet, and just came up with 32 as the answer. You start with 35, and I guess you clip it down, you know, clip it down as you need to. But, yes, 32 feet. But that was part of what I was looking up when I looked up about the length of the radiation pattern. It had 35 feet as an arbitrary number. But if 32 is the answer they want from the FCC, okay, we'll go with the 32. Okay, anybody else have any comments before I deliver the last question of the evening? Over.
K2HA.
No audio on that last one, Mike.
I think Fred jumped in there. Fred, go ahead.
Yeah, before you do the last question, I wanted to go back to that dipole question about distance off the ground. And so when your dipole is close to the ground, your signal tends to be directed back at a high vertical angle, which then changes the typical figure eight pattern of a dipole, if it's up at higher level, into an omnidirectional donut. It depends on what you want to do with it. If you want to be able to transmit omnidirectional, then closer to the ground. If you want it as the figure eight pattern of the dipole, then, you know, the biggest lobes off the side and then getting smaller toward the points, then you put it up higher. This is Fred, K2HA.
Yes, thank you for that. Being here in North Texas, I'm still getting used to this state is 500 miles long. Well, it's Florida is just about as long also, but it's not as wide. So I run into this situation here in Texas. It's long and wide, and I can't reach all the corners, and I try it on HF, and I'm not making it, so I got to figure something out. Okay, I'm going on the last question of the evening. It's G9C11. G9C11, I'm going to let it drop, and this is an interesting question here. Letting it drop, and I'll come back. See, G9C11 is which HF antenna would be the best to use for minimizing interference? Which HF antenna would be the best to use for minimizing interference? Alpha is a quarter wave vertical antenna. Bravo is an isotropic antenna. C is a directional antenna. And Delta is an omnidirectional antenna. Anybody want to take a shot at this? Which is the best HF antenna?
I'm Charlie Bravo.
Hey, George, take a clip at this one. You got it, George. Over.
Yeah, buddy, I'll see if my memory serves me right there. I would have to say a directional antenna because, you're pointing it in one direction, and off the back of it you have the reflection off in the noise there. So I'll take a guess at a directional antenna.
Well, George, I don't have that cigar that I mentioned, but I'll tell you what, you're right, a directional antenna. Much like a lantern versus a flashlight, an omnidirectional antenna versus a directional antenna is a case-specific choice. Now, like a flashlight, a directional antenna will allow us focusing the signal toward a specific location. We've seen that and heard that. The focusing of a signal intensely on a target spot. Also, directional antennas are great for point-to-point connections. Since the signal is in more of a cone shape and only goes in a direction that it is pointed, less people have access to it and makes the signal more secure and encounters less interference. Yes, I've heard fellows with directional antennas that keep saying, let me swing around and get to you, and what a difference it makes. I often wonder if I could ever get hold of a directional antenna, but knowing me, I'd be pointing the wrong way. Yes, a directional antenna, just like a flashlight. Anybody have comments on that? KD0CDQ.
Six, Victor.
Go ahead, Gordon. Tell us all about these directional antennas. Over.
Nah, George hit that right on the nail's head. No explanation needed on that one. I'm sorry. I had moved away from the equipment when you called me earlier on this as MUFL. Question. Just throw the mutual out of the way and call it azimuth. And basically that's, the horizontal deviation measured clockwise. And, there's a couple of different interpretations of this, astronomy being one and surveying being another. But basically it's the angle off of ground. Or a bearing from a standard direction as from north or south. While I've got it here, let me buy a nickel. I know you're about ready to close. I want to say that tonight closes our course out at 87.5% completion. Tuesday night will be the end of the course. That will be the 100% point and the end of the tunnel. And I'm very hopeful that the students that are participating here have been taking their practice exams and will continue to do so if they feel it's necessary. We'd like to hear from those that were involved, Mike, in the respect of how did the course work out for you? Were you satisfied, et cetera, et cetera? And most importantly, we'd like to hear from these people when they sit down to take the general exam as to how they found it and how they did. And it's been our experience in the 10 or 11 years that we've been running this. We hear back from maybe somewhere between 30 and 50% of the students, but we don't hear all of them, so we don't know if they came home with the bacon or not. Mike, KY6V, back to you.
You just led into my comment. Yesterday morning I had breakfast with a bunch of hams, and they weren't the kind of hams you hang on a string, but the hams that sit in chairs. And I was telling the hams about how Echolink, how SCARS for 10 years or more has been doing these classes. And everyone was very attuned to that because I mentioned there are folks that have handicaps and are not able to get to classes where it's organized, or people that live too distant to get to classes. And so many different reasons that people can't get out. And this can help them relax and realize that they're not alone, and that there's questions that okay, they can be clarified. Because we always ask, if anybody has a question that we haven't covered or any question that we have covered, send us an email. Send us an email and we'll explain it a little bit further for you. Because a lot of folks feel very lonely when they take these tests because they don't often have anybody to share it with. Yes, so these classes are, I think, are very helpful. And that group of hams yesterday were in agreement that they all wish they could do Echolink. We need to get more people into Echolink because it's so universal. But it's kind of limited for some reason. I don't know. But I do applaud SCARS for doing this. And I do applaud that Echolink is a good tool. And I'd like to see more folks use it. And I like this method because it makes you feel one-to-one instead of just looking at a flat piece of paper and getting kind of bored. Anybody else have any comments about this format that we use? KD0CDQ, I am a listening.
Charlie Bravo with another comment.
George, your comments are always welcome. Go ahead, George.
Well, thank you, my friend there. Just to add to the picture of SCARS, you know, we also have a TIN hour or 2 hours, whatever the time frame might run into, where different things are discussed there. And it's a technical, so to speak, net there. And, you know, if there's something in the amateur radio field, lately it's been some of these strawberry pies been discussed there. But, you know, if there's something that you don't quite understand about antennas, then we also have the website where different podcasts is there about previous sessions on the TIN network and different subject matter concerning ham radio has been discussed and all. And you know, like I mentioned there, it's a fabulous way to increase your knowledge in the field of ham radio and computers and just about how to, maybe even how to grow a tater or two. With that, we'll throw it back your way, Mike, and I thank you for doing the session tonight. KW4, Alima, Charlie Bravo, back to net control.
Okay, I'm going to put a tail on this pony, and I'm going to give you the email address if you have any questions pertaining to the questions, or even questions we haven't covered. It doesn't matter. Or if you want to get to know the group and get some information, here's the email address. It's VOIP at SCARS, SCARSVOIP.com. So it's VOIP at SCARSVOIP.com, and you'll get an answer back. This is a friendly group. We want to help folks. We're not just here to listen to our own echo. We can always watch TV and watch a bunch of echoes. But this is fun, trying to help other people. It's a hobby. It's something we enjoy, and we're trying to help folks enjoy it more. If anybody else has any comments, I'm through for the evening, and I'll be back Tuesday evening, same time, same station, and we'll finish up these general class questions. KD0, CDQ, and good night.